Expand your knowledge on alternatives to animal experimentation with the latest scientific information provided during the 11th World Congress on Alternatives and Animal Use in Life Sciences.
Welcome to this second episode of podcast organized by the World Congress on Alternative and Animal Use in Life Science. The World Congress will take place from the 23rd of August until the 2nd of September online. I'm today with Sandra Cook. Hello, Sandra. Thank you for being with us.
Hello, Jan. Thank you for inviting me for this podcast.
Sandra Cook works for the European Commission for the Joint Research Centre. She is also the coordinator of the EU Network of Laboratory for the Validation of Alternative Methods, which gather 35 laboratories across the different EU member states. Sandra, you were awarded the Bjørn Eggvoll Memorial Award for the year 2020. What does this award recognize?
This award, in a way, recognizes my 30 years work on development and, as you just said, also validation of new in vitro cell and tissue culture-based methods, especially for applying them in diverse fields, but I've been working mainly in regulatory science for in vitro toxicity testing for the replacement of animal experiments. So when looking over these 30 years of work, I've been working first more in research, basic research, and then I started to apply these in vitro cell and tissue cultures more and more, and also beginning to understand that they can be integrated using mathematical models, so the application. And then following on that, you start obviously to understand that it's important to have the European and also global impact of the use of these types of methods for the harmonized implementation of the methods in regulation. And then the last part, indeed, I'm coordinating now this network of European validation labs, because then you can increase the capacity to, in a way, to standardize such methods for routine testing and validate them for taking up in guidelines. So basically, looking a little bit back, it all started many years ago because actually I have a degree as an engineer. So I'm a STEM engineer, but the first generation of biotechnology engineers, bioengineers. But then I got so much passionate about work that I understood was happening in my university, which was the Free University in Brussels, in the department of where already at that time was Professor Rogiers. They were working on cell and tissue culture work. So they had liver cultures, but also skin cultures. And actually, that was the first example of biotech research that led to, in the end, to 3D skin cultures. In that lab, they worked very closely also with the wound burning center in Brussels. And so when patients are severely burned, one of the things that the lab of Professor Rogiers and Professor Verkruijse started to do was to expand these a few of these cells of these patients. And so that was the beginning of thinking about the real first engineered tissues for in this kind. In this example, it was therapy, but also starting to use them for applications in toxicology. And that was especially the work that I was allocated to when I was asked by a Belgian pharmaceutical company through my professor, Janssen Pharmaceutica, to lead their first in vitro toxicology laboratory to standardize in vitro skin and eye irritation methods, and also introducing good experimental practice and quality control measures for routine testing, because this company lab obviously was working under good laboratory practices and was inspected not only by European inspectors, but also by the United States and Japan. So we started to really work with these methods in a quality environment. And we were applying them together with the department on in vivo toxicology to see if they were predictive for checking if the new chemical entities that were developed by my company had in vitro skin and eye mutation. And that was really a big milestone because we could convince the management at that company in that time when the compounds came out as positive that they didn't went anymore in the in vivo animal testing. And also in that time, I participated in that time, it was called the home office study where there was, let's say, Michael Bowles in Italy in Agfam started to work on validation and the, you know, these things in life happen, and it happened that I really in 1996 joined the European Center for Validation of Alternative Methods, which was established a bit before in 1991, following up a requirement of a directive. This was the directive 86609 EEC that indicated that the European Commission and its member states actively need to support the development, validation, and acceptance of methods to replace, reduce, or refine the use of animals. So I joined the team in the time of Michael Bowles, where we started, obviously, to work on the topic of bringing these in vitro cell and tissue culture methods into regulation. And then the last part of the career, we saw that validation is obviously giving trust to decision makers, but also to the industries that have to use these methods, and accelerating the validation capacity has been some of the important drivers, and this European capacity building and knowledge sharing and agreeing together on good in vitro experimental practices to build trust in these new innovative methods really filled an important gap that was needed in this validation business, because we needed a lot of these new mechanistic methods. And so with the establishment of EU NEDVAL, so the network in of laboratories in 2013, we followed up this, let's say, the revision, so the Animal Welfare Directive 2010-63 EU, because it gave a significantly more detailed and comprehensive piece of information in the legislation that came into force already in 2010 in the EU member states. And that, I think, that piece legislation really contributed to give another boost to the development and validation work. And the most recent example of how, let's say, this concept of boosting the validation capacity helps is by joining forces. 15 of the 35 member state labs are currently helping experimentally also during the COVID pandemic to bring into OECD test guidelines the necessary battery of methods to fill a very important gap in endocrine disruptor testing, methods for identifying, 17 methods for identifying compounds that are so-called thyroid disruptors.
And Sandra, what will you do with this award?
Actually, it's a great honor to receive this award, and I decided to dedicate this prize to a charity organization where I am in the scientific committee. It's a charity organization which is called Il Pezzettino, which is the piece. It's a community of 30 children, all victims of complex trauma, when you would say that a little bit more scientifically. So these are children that have been abused in many ways. And so I think with this prize money, we are working with the University of Padova to try by research in this field to try to cure a part of their memories. And so the prize will be entirely dedicated to all the kids and the staff and the volunteers of Il Pezzettino. And obviously, in my heart, I dedicate this prize to my family and obviously my children, my husband, my dad and my mom, and all the friends and colleagues, you know, that have always given me my smiles in life.
This is incredible, Sandra. This is such a great news to know that the scientific prize will help those children. You've been working for the European Commission since 1996. So it's almost 25 years. And you mentioned the directive on the protection of animals for research purposes adopted in 2010. Can you tell us more about the legislative framework in the EU around non-animal testing and how it has evolved in the last 20 years?
You know, it started already as far back as 1980s. At that moment, the EU made a commitment to pursue efforts to replace the use of animals used in experiments and to improve the welfare of those animals still being used. So indeed, in Europe, in 1986, we had the first directive on the protection of laboratory animals. And this led to the adoption of this directive that I mentioned, 86609 EEC. And that directive set in place a first set of regulations regarding the protection of animals used for experimental and scientific purposes. Now, by 2008, it was kind of clear that original legislation needed an upgrade. And so our colleagues that worked a lot on this upgrade, also my colleague in the environment, Susanna Luimi, and the teams involved, the commission, with the hard work of a lot of stakeholders, in the European Commission, together also with the GRC, Joint Research Center, where I'm working, they adopted a proposal to revise the directive 86609 EEC. And the result was this directive 2010-63 EU. It was significantly more detailed. The directive, what did it do? It removed quite a number of legal ambiguities, and it spelled clearly out the requirements of the 3 R's principles. Yeah. And for the first time required the Commission and Member State to contribute to the development and validation of alternative methods, but really very clearly stated. It set out the legal basis of, it was now called IRL-EGVAM, the reference lab, and introduced measures to facilitate acceptance and promotion of alternative methods. Then, let's say another regulation worldwide mentioning, obviously, is the REACH regulation, so registration, evaluation, authorization, and restriction of chemicals, because this set further out requirements for the protection of experimental animals, stating that animal testing should be a last resort and that duplication of tests should be minimized. It's also further set out legal requirements to develop alternative methods to assess hazardous substances in that time. So then other relevant legislations that very important were driving the field. It was the Cosmetics Products Regulation 1223-2009. Cosmetic industry has for years, decennia, been really investing a lot in this area. And then you also have the Plant Protection Regulation 1107/2009, the Biocides Product Regulation 528/2012, and Directive 2004/10/EC on the principles of good laboratory practices, which was a follow-up of the work I've been doing with others together at OECD to get a first advisory document on the implementation of good laboratory practices for in vitro methods, and putting this advisory document, GLP advisory document, out at an OECD level, gave again a boost in indicating the importance of this type of in vitro mechanistic methods for regulatory testing. So I think that was also something important to mention.
And can you tell us a bit more about what non-EU member states are doing and what is the situation globally when it comes to the protection of animal use for scientific purposes or the promotion of non-animal method?
Yeah, I'm very happy that you asked this question, because I think in all our regulatory scientific work, we have to think globally. And I mentioned already OECD, but there is other work ongoing by standardization bodies also, for instance, in the field of vaccine testing. A lot of work has been done at European level, but also globally. So many authorities over the last decennia, really, you see globally commitment to find new alternatives and also to try to help by introducing regulatory measures. So already in 2009, representatives from Health Canada, the European Commission ourselves, the National Institute of Health Sciences in Japan, and the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences in the United States signed the Memorandum of Cooperation establishing the International Cooperation of Alternative Test Methods, ICATEM. And that's obviously a serious commitment of globally working together. In 2011, the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences in South Korea formally joined the cooperation. And then since then, yeah, other governmental institutions from Brazil, Singapore, China, and Taiwan have been sharing experience and knowledge on an ad hoc basis. And I also traveled both to Brazil and China, discussing, how we can enforce more, the use of these alternative methods. And also, for instance, introducing good in vitro method practices, because this BEMA award, one of the last things that I've been doing is, together with many stakeholders in the world, is having an OECD guidance document on good in vitro method practices. And let's say all these global players are obviously implementing these good in experimental practices. Very important to note also, I think, at a global level, was that in 2019, the United States EPA announced that they will reduce mammal studies by 30% by 2025 and eliminate all mammal studies by 2035. And then the US Food and Drug Administration, FDA, plays also a major role in regulating animal use. And they, in February 2020, issued a guidance draft on the non-clinical use of drugs and biologicals in guinea pigs. And this draft stated that scientists should use in vitro, in chemical, and in silico methods instead of guinea pigs. And then South Korea proposed this year a law to promote alternatives to animal testing. And then many, many other names are worth mentioning, driving the alternatives towards legislation and regulation. I just mentioned some of them, the CVMP, the Committee for Medicinal Products for Veterinary Use, the Joint VRS Working Group, the CHMP, the Committee for Medicinal Products for Human Use. So as you can see, these and many other global working groups are working on the application of 3Rs in regulatory manners.
Research and technology are advancing tremendously in this field. Can you tell us what are the latest breakthrough technology to replace animal testing and how they are adopted by the industry?
Well, I think even from when I started in this field, you know, technology innovation has been always a big driver in this field, and our colleagues in the commission at DG Research and at RTD now, research and development in that time, they were really supporting a lot of the activities in this field. But as I said, we always have seen technology evolution evolving over the time. The most important thing, I think, in this field is that there is now a lot of communication. So that is a key breakthrough in the global alignment that a big crowd, like, you know, everybody that will go to the World Conference, agrees that to make progress at a regulatory level with these in vitro mechanistic tests and also in silico methods, the integration, the input data from the in vitro methods can go there and from the in silico methods, we need to continue amplifying the mechanistic approach to toxicity based on both in vitro cell and tissue culture methods and mathematical in silico models. And as such, we start to bring more and more reality into what we get out of these methods. So, for instance, the aspects of personalized toxicology. The whole world now, I think, and why this is very important, I want to mention that now, because obviously the World Conference will be virtual because we have a pandemic ongoing. And what we as scientists in this field have been witnessing, that when we look at SARS-CoV-2, COVID-19 disease, that individuals are reacting differently to exposure, yeah, to body invaders like virus. But we know also that individuals, we know that for a long time, look what we see in the pharmaceutical industry, that people are reacting different to exposure to chemicals, drugs, and also, for instance, other things where we are faced with biomedical devices, body invaders like bacteria and virus. So the technologies being developed are there to get better information on what these external xenobiotics or invaders do to our body and what the body does to these invaders. So the kinetics and dynamics. And also in my 30 years of career, I've been both focusing a lot on kinetics and dynamics, as much as the in vitro methods need to put in the same sentence as the in silico methods, the same with obviously the kinetics and dynamics, because this is the application of their integrated use. Now, when we look at the technology advances, and let's say the more recent one, but already several of them started already 30 years ago, we can look to technology toolbox ranging from automation technologies. But I remember, you know, in our labs there at Janssen Pharmaceutical, we were already doing automatic pipetting to reduce the human variability. So, but now obviously we have huge robotic facility to do, for instance, cell culture or measuring endpoints. What has been also technologically driven a lot is the whole miniaturization technologies. I remember one of the first projects where I was actually together with my unit now, head Maurice Whelan, going to a project supported by a colleagues of research was the nanodrop technology, so that we could, spot cells in nanodrops to miniaturize, let's say, everything. Data integration technologies have been also very, very important, yeah? 3D printing technologies, you see them now booming up everywhere. And then I mentioned in the beginning, tissue engineering technologies, but being a biotech person from education, the tissue engineering field has been evolving over the years. So What is very important for me is that when we look at all these technologies and this knowledge, that what we now need to do is, rather than observing the toxic effect of substances on animals, the focus has been shifting to expand over 3-4 decennia the necessary enabling technologies, the ones that I just mentioned, to better understand how toxicity exerted from a molecular level up to a population, and the individuals in this population. And we have also a boost, for instance, in the adverse outcome pathways. Now we start to talk about also the BOPs, the beneficial outcome pathways, with, for instance, nutraceuticals. Identifying also, and to what extent, the characteristics of the tested chemicals or substances or formulation induce toxicity in people of different gender, age, sick or healthy. So these personalized technologies, driven a lot, obviously, by the pharmaceutical industry, because they have a lot of the data. And developing also new screens and reliable in vitro and silico predictive methods when you need to have fast responses to some things that are happening. We need to know things very quickly, and you need screening methods. An important component of a toxicology method is obviously the test system, you know, the cells and the tissues, when we talk about in vitro methods. So these ones have also evolving from very simple ones to those with increasing complexity. So there we have seen that over the years, the 30 years I'm witnessing this field, many have been trying to mimic human biology. We have seen popping up the stem cell technologies for culturing combined with microfluidics that made really a boom into primary and stem cell derived 3D spheroid testing systems. But also they gave rise to mini whole bodies test systems, the so-called organ on a chip devices that basically emulate human biology and can reproduce one or more aspects of organ functionality. And taking into account all these things, we have a lot of benefits, because they can lead to better testing of chemicals, biomedical devices, mixtures, nanomaterials, microorganisms, etc. They have the potential to amplify the availability of personalized treatments and checking personalized adverse effects, taking into account our genetic diversity, ethnicity, sex, age. And it also can reduce cost of clinical trials and of other necessary trials, and go finally more into personalized toxicity testing. What has been also very important regarding to the technologies, because we have all these technologies, but we had recently a very nice meeting together with the European Standardization Organizations, SEN and CINELEC, because when we want global harmonization of these methods, also embracing all these new technologies and having also, for instance, mutual acceptance of the data that are coming out of these methods, which are reducing animal testing, we need to put all these science innovations into standards, facilitating implementation in the current, but also the future regulatory frameworks. So the standardization is really going arm in arm, obviously, with innovation, if we want to make impact. And then we have other things. So how we get our information quickly. There has been a boom in data science and natural language processing advances to check really the literature, because, you know, we have so much things that information that is coming out also in scientific literature. So we need the related computer science technologies and models. And this is the kind of glue we need to integrate all pieces of the puzzle to give decision makers information in such a way that can help to make their critical decisions. So, for instance, we have been embracing AI to do better our selection of our thyroid disrupting chemicals, to do it much quicker than when you do it. But obviously you always need your expert advice. So you need a hybrid between AI and expert advice to make solid decisions in your validation studies.
You just talk about validation, and that was going to be my next question. How are those non-animal methods validated at international level and European level?
Now, for validating, call it also qualification, assessing methods, both in vitro and in silico, you need a clear purpose formulation. So why you are validating, for what? So as an example, as I mentioned in the beginning, we are trying now to have a battery of in vitro methods for detecting endocrine disrupting chemicals, more particularly thyroid disruptors. So what we're doing is with these 15 EU member state laboratories, part of the EU NEDVAL labs, they are checking the ability of 17 methods to identify chemicals that affect thyroid activity and which may therefore disturb the normal function of the thyroid system. Now we are following up closely all the things that have been described in an OECD scoping document on the topic, but we also, when we are validating, we are also validating and checking the new advances in the methods and the test system related to this validation. Now, important in this field is that you check that what we're doing there is relevant to what is happening in the real world. So for instance, we know that exposure to thyroid disruptors during pregnancy or early years of life can lead to cognitive and behavioral defects in children, as well as deafness, etc. Exposure during adulthood has been linked to autoimmune disorders, thyroid cancer, and cardiovascular disease, and many things more. So when we are validating these methods, and there is definitely a lack of validated in vitro methods for identifying chemicals that affect thyroid activity, We know we need these methods because we are hampering efforts to manage the risk of exposure to thyroid disruptor to the population. So we need to be fast, efficient, and work together. So we need a lot of methods, 17 and even more, because also there are other projects ongoing to fill all the gaps with methods we need for getting solid information. So we have complexity in the validation methods we need, in the methods that we need to validate, many of them. We need to target multiple pathways, that are involved in effect of chemical substances. So in thyroid disruptors, we have multiple pathways linked to synthesis, release, transport, metabolism, and target organ effects. I mentioned the brain, but also others of thyroid hormones. So therefore, how you design now today these new studies? Well, to validate 17 methods together, we designed the study very pragmatic, because otherwise, if you want to do everything, you don't do anything. You can do also sometimes you happen to end up doing nothing. So you are very pragmatic to do everything in a very short time span. Where we needed to be pragmatic, super pragmatic, to move the methods as soon as possible in experimental testing in the member states lab. So we needed a very good standard operating procedure, so very good method description, and check if these methods have the mechanistic relevance and if they can routinely run and giving reproducible readouts. Yeah, because any method can only give information if it's a good method and if it can be reproduced in the lab itself or by others. So the win within lab reproducibility and between lab reproducibility. Now, the biggest hurdle, you know, and we heard that also with SARS-CoV-2 testing methods, you know, the PCRs, they needed a good positive control. Now, the same here in our validation business. You need the biggest hurdle in the validation, I could say from my experience in this year, is to find and agree when you have mechanistic methods on the correct reference and positive and negative control compounds, chemicals, and also to get good method acceptance criteria to verify if the methods actually pick up a specific biological mechanism. So we will be talking a bit about that in detail during our session, where we show also that we need to globally collaborate to accelerate the availability of validated methods and to finally trust these methods. And you will see a whole team of collaborators speaking in our TIRET session on the 24th of August at 6:30 p.m. in our VC 11 session. So validation has been done over these 30 years in various forms. So first we start to validate maybe a few methods for skin and eye irritation. Now we're starting to validate a lot of methods together. But all boils down to get the data and the information to convince users, including our companies and the regulators, that these methods can help in safety decision-making. Because that's it, we need to convince them that they can trust these methods. And validation is there for the important process to finalize, because this gives obviously more trust that these things are reproducible and relevant. So we at the European Commission Joint Research Center have become, over the years with the work we have done, very pragmatic on what are the minimum requirements of such methods, and written this down, as I mentioned before, in this OECD guidance document on good in vitro method practices, where all OECD countries could comment on. And together with my colleagues and my dear colleague, Jerry Bow, we went through all these comments. And I think all comments are good comments. It leads to a major milestone, and the giving consensus document was accepted in 2018 by all OECD member countries and is now used across the globe as an important in vitro experimental standard.
What would you say are the remaining challenges to accelerate the adoption of these alternative methods?
I will again speak about the big T. It's about trust, probably also another T, transparency, so openness, to change of something that is done very proxy for almost four decennia on animals, and did not allow to have solid personalized toxicity processes. And approaches. So I think we need now really this paradigm shift, but implement it. We learned that the uncertainty to predict toxic effect and individual toxic effect in the human population is very blurry with these in vivo methods, because obviously they use safety factors. And we just have to look at the inter-individual variation to drugs, and as I mentioned, to SARS-CoV-2. I myself was almost killed, by taking a compound every day for more than 6 years. It was an anti-leukotriene. Is the compound a bad compound? Not for everybody, but for me, it was. Looking back to my case and using the available in silico and in vitro mechanistic method for that compound, could have avoided that I was almost 1 year, and then afterwards, it took a long time to recover, not able to work in the field of 1 hour full replacement. Because these standard 10-time safety factors can, to an extent, reduce the risk, but we see over and over where the safety factors fail when this compound enters in the real world.
So trust and openness are the main ingredients to accelerate the adoption of alternative methods. The European Commission recently adopted the EU Chemical Strategy for Sustainability, which is the first step for a toxic-free environment, as announced in the Green Deal. How does the 3R principle integrate into the strategy?
So the EU Chemical Strategy for Sustainability is part of the EU's zero pollution ambition and is one of the first deliverables of the European Green Deal. In my view, the strategy can only be successful and deliver on its promise if non-animal methods and approaches are used for chemical hazard and risk assessment. So 1R. So the aim in this field should be to move away from a checklist approach based on in vivo animal-based test guidelines that does not efficiently meet the legislative mandates, which require increased number of chemical assessments without a parallel increase in the use of animals. So we need to embrace all these new technologies that are around there to really deliver fast, efficient, and pragmatic.
You participate in the previous editions of the World Congress on Alternative and Animal Use in Life Sciences. What can the audience expect from this event?
I think the organizers did really everything in their power to have a groundbreaking virtual experience. We see that also that they are involving and giving opportunities to early career scientists. They're actively involved in the preparations, in the conception of the program, and they will be sharing during the conference their ideas. And when this is happening, when early career scientists are coming so active in the program, magic happens, you know, by listening to each other. Really, I've been in our recent summer school and some programs that the Commission has been stimulating, let's say, the work all together across generations. And this is the first thing I think that you see very important in this conference. So this conference will be using a virtual platform made by a game-making company, Thomas Hartung. He mentioned that already in the first podcast. And I think, indeed, again, this will be a real generational game changer, using such a platform by allowing everybody to speak up and use the available innovative platforms for launching the ideas in the science field. I think there are also several planned brainstorming sessions. We talk a lot about brainstorming, but I think brainstorming in my 30 years of career has really given some fruits. You know, I think still about the first workshops organized by Michael Bowles on all the topics. So in such workshop brainstorming sessions, scientists talk about the ideas that they are pursuing, the targets to create. Now, obviously, during the conference, so we get really scientific ecosystem people networks build up to collaborate. And we have seen that in our field. Also, not only during the conference, but after the conference. And, you know, following up all these seeding ideas, I think that that is really important. So sharing knowledge and continuously all growing together and celebrating all achievements. I think, I'm still as enthusiastic when I entered in this field and so much has been happening. I think really so much has been happening. So some might argue that the 3Rs or the 1Rs movement, fully animal free and scientific work went too slow. But looking back, to my 30 years of work on developing and validating these cell and tissue culture methods and integrating the data into mathematical models. Brings really my memories back to Brussels, the days that I went in Brussels on the street and I was protesting to use more mechanistic cell-based methods to understand better human biology and stopping animal testing. Well, we came a long way. And as in the artificial intelligence field, we have done a deep learning curve. We should not look back anymore, but embrace effectively all what we have learned in the alternatives to animal field and start using, trusting, being transparent. And when using these methods from this available rich toolbox, we will be enabling, lowering, for instance, the world disease burden due to exposure to chemicals, external invaders also like the current one, SARS-CoV-2.
Thank you very much, Sandra. Thank you very much for sharing all this knowledge with us.
It was a pleasure, Jean, to chat with you. I'm looking so much forward to the end of August, beginning of September. Where we all will do miracles, you know, to continue to move together this field forward. So stronger together, growing together forever.
Thank you very much, Sandra. I'm also looking forward to seeing you virtually from the 23rd of August until the 2nd of September online during this World Congress. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. This podcast was produced by Alta Talks Academy. Registration to the 11th Congress on Alternatives and Animal Use in Life Sciences is now open on our website, www.wc11maastricht.org.